Hi, everyone. Welcome back to the Sherry and Sade podcast. I am your host, Sherry and Sade. So today we are going to be talking about three engagements from Prince Harry, the Duke of Sussex, and Meghan, the Duchess of Sussex. We're also going to be talking about the tragedy that is unfolding from World Central Kitchen. And then we're also going to be talking about King Charles's cancer might have been identified, what form of cancer. And we're also going to be talking about allegedly his thoughts on Prince William becoming king sooner rather than later. All that and more, so let's get into it. Once again, thank you so much for listening to my podcast. You guys, we just reached 7,000 downloads. That is amazing. Thank you to everyone who has been sharing, listening, etc., amplifying, promoting the podcast. I really appreciate it. And I can now actually hold advertisers. So if you're interested in advertising on my podcast, feel free to go to podbean.com, search my podcast, and you can actually select the button that says advertise on this podcast. So I look forward to seeing and hearing your submissions. So today we are going to get into three engagements from Prince Harry and Meghan, the Duke and Duchess of Sussex. We're also going to be talking about everything going on with World Central Kitchen. Oh my gosh, that is just tearing my heart to pieces. And then of course we have to have an update with King Charles and his cancer diagnosis and the form of cancer that he has might have been identified. So we're going to dig into where that comes from. In the meantime, if you are a squatty here, hey, 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 welcome. Thank you so much for being here. And if you are not, hopefully you convert soon. But in the meantime, everyone should be enjoying the podcast, and I certainly hope that you are. So let's jump into this first engagement. Now, the engagements we're going to be talking about, the details just became public. However, these engagements took place in March. So I did talk about two out of the three of these. However, I didn't have all the details. And as I promised, now that I have everything, I'm sharing them with you. So first, I'm going to start with this article in People magazine. And it was written by Stephanie Pettit, titled, Meghan Markle Shows Off Her Acting Skills During Special Story Time at Children's Hospital in Los Angeles. This isn't the first time the Duchess of Sussex, who authored a children's book, has connected with kids through stories. That is absolutely right. You guys know I own The Bench. I was one of the first people to order it, and I still have it, and I have it in a little case now. It's in a little protector because I have all the media that I've purchased over the years of Harry and Meghan and anyone affiliated with them. And so I'm slowly just acquiring different methods to protect these items so that even though they're just sitting up in my office with wear and tear and years gone by and dust, I just don't want anything to happen to them. They're just really precious. So I have The Bench as well. Now, this is a beautiful dress, and we're going to get into this over on Patreon, her outfit that she wore for this engagement. But for now, let's get into this article. It starts with Story Time with Meghan Markle. Now, I have read probably hundreds, if not maybe 40, of Stephanie Pettit's articles for People magazine, and I kind of nitpick this, and over time, hopefully I'll get over it, but I'm hoping at some point she makes the adjustment to referring to Meghan by her real name and title, and it's Meghan, Duchess of Sussex. That's it. You can call her the Duchess of Sussex. You can call her Duchess of Sussex. You don't have to have the. You can call her Meghan. But it would be great if media by now, I mean, Meghan's been married since 2018. Her name has been changed since her wedding day. It would be great if everybody made the jump from calling her Meghan Markle, which is her stage name, and I get it. For SEO purposes, they want to use Meghan Markle because it'll pull in a lot more engagement because you have the Suits fans, you have the royal fans, and then you have the rest of us who love it all. And Meghan Markle is the more widely known name because that is her first name and her stage name. So I get it. I don't think it's malicious, but I do feel like it's a bit lazy. And so I would love to see Stephanie Pettit and Aaron Hill and everyone make the adjustment to calling her by her real name. I mean, I'm married and my name is hyphenated, and it doesn't really bother me when people call me by my original last name. But since my last name is hyphenated, you could just say the whole name or just call me Sharian. And I would just prefer that people respect the changes that have occurred in life and respect the stage that we're all in. That's all. That's all. So anyway, story time with Megan, the Duchess of Sussex. The Duchess of Sussex visited the Children's Hospital in Los Angeles on March 21st, where she had led a literally healing session. Quote, children were laughing and singing as the Duchess turned into character with every page as she read patient favorite books like Rosie the Riveter, Pete the Cat, and I Saw a Cat, according to a statement. Megan also helped children with STEAM activities connected to each book. Now, what is a STEAM activity? You know what? They're probably going to explain it. In a video of the visit, Megan greeted the children as they gathered for the engaging reading time, excitedly showing the cover of Rosie Revere, Engineer, and telling the group, this is one of my favorites. The mom of two, she shares a four-year-old son with son Prince Archie and a two-year-old daughter, Princess Lilibet, with Prince Harry, gave animated readings, adding voice inflections and gestures to go along with the stories. Children shouted out answers and sang along as Megan read Pete the Cat and his four groovy buttons. Quote, this was a great choice, friends, she said as she closed the book and declared the end. Megan also posed with photos with children. Now, this is kind of poorly written, y'all. Listen to how this sentence was written. Megan also posed with photos with children. I think maybe they were just in a rush to get this out. This is Megan posed four photos with children talking to a young girl about how neat an instant camera image was. Aw, this isn't the first time Megan's storytelling skills were on display. To mark Archie's first birthday in May 2020, the Duchess of Sussex and her son appeared in a video where she read the book Duck Rabbit by Amy Krauss Rosenthal and Tom Lichtenheld. Archie's relationship with dad Prince Harry also inspired Megan to author a children's book, The Bench. Quote, The Bench started as a poem I wrote for my husband on Father's Day, the month after Archie was born, Megan said in the press release from publisher Random House Children's Books. That poem became this story. Megan dedicated the book to Harry and Archie, quote, for the man and the boy who make my heart go pump pump, the dedication says. As a guest on Brightly Storytime, the Duchess of Sussex read The Bench in a YouTube video in 2021, and she also shared her story with children at PS 123 Mahalia Jackson School in Harlem during a visit in September of that same year. Quote, I wrote this when we had just had our little boy, and I haven't read it to any other kids but you, she told the group who sat together with Prince Harry to hear the reading. He sure did. He sat there crisscross applesauce and listened to that story. Children's Hospital Los Angeles' Literally Healing is a reading program that gifts families at the hospital more than 65,000 books annually and provides a unique opportunity to promote literacy. The story time was part of a Make March Matter, an annual fundraiser at the hospital that unites celebrities, businesses, and the greater community in support of its mission in creating hope and building healthier futures. Since 2016, the campaign has raised more than $10 million for the Children's Hospital Los Angeles. Celebrities are known to pop into Children's Hospital Los Angeles to cheer up patients, from Mark Hamill reading Darth Vader and Son by Jeffrey Brown during a virtual visit in 2021, to Tom Holland, Zendaya, and Jake Gyllenhaal giving youngsters a special advanced screening of Spider-Man Far From Home in 2019. Wow, I know they appreciated that, but that is very beautiful. So let's hear a little clip about the visit.
Night as Rosie lay wide-eyed in bed, a daring idea crept into her head.
Did you know that cheddar cheese spray keeps the snakes away?
Wow.
I didn't know that.
She turned around to leave, but then Great Granite Rose grabbed hold
of her. That's right, three.
It's a three, four.
Dolphin rolled away. Well, now how many buttons are left?
One.
Exactly right.
Two.
No. Oh no! The last button popped off and it rolled away. Friends, how many buttons are left? You're right. Zero.
Now that video is up on Vimeo. You can find that on Vimeo.com, and you can go to the Archwell Foundation Vimeo page, which is super cool. Watching her read that was very cute. Now, it was a little muffled because everyone had to be masked up, obviously. But her animation and her inflection was really great. And the kids were so engaged. They even ended it by singing a song. So I highly recommend checking out the full video. It is adorable. And if you are on my Patreon, you can see that included in tomorrow's visuals of this podcast tomorrow. So you will see it then. So next, I want to talk about their most recent update on Sussex.com. You know, that's my hub for all things Sussex. But on Sussex.com, they just updated it with an evening of art where Harry and Meghan attended the Kinsey Collection at SoFi Stadium, that art exhibit. Now, we've talked a little about it based on people who were there and as well as a few news stories that came out, but there's nothing like getting it directly from the source. So let's read this inclusion or this most recent item on Sussex.com. And again, at Sussex.com, an evening of art. On Thursday, March 21st, pause, that's my husband's birthday, woo-woo, the Duke and Duchess of Sussex hosted a special event in honor of the Kinsey African American Art and History Collection, one of the most extensive holdings of African American art, artifacts, and documents. The illustrious collection, which first debuted at SoFi Stadium and Hollywood Park during the Super Bowl in 2022, tells the powerful and poignant story of Black history spanning centuries of resilience, creativity, and triumph. The evening was brought together through a partnership between the Archwell Foundation and the Bernard and Shirley Kinsey Foundation for Art and Education. Welcoming an array of industry leaders to the space, the Duke and Duchess joined guests on a private tour of the exhibit, which was followed by a moderated conversation with Bernard, Shirley, and Khalil Kinsey, trailblazers in the art and philanthropy community who have dedicated their lives to uplifting and celebrating prolific art and culture in the context of Black America. The group discussed the history and significance of Black art and how our communities can work together to preserve this vital piece of American history. Through this exhibit and many others, the Kinsey family has enabled millions across the globe to access the African American experience through art. The Kinsey African American Art and History Collection is one of the largest and most comprehensive private collections of African American art and historical artifacts in the world, containing rare and important primary source items from 1595 to present day, and fine art by an array of seminal artists, including Jacob Lawrence, Alma Thomas, Ernie Barnes, Bisa Butler, and many more. The award-winning collection is currently on view at the Holocaust Museum in Houston through June 2024. Now, we did talk about this at the time, and we've actually also talked about the Kinsey Art Exhibition before, when Queen Doria Ragland actually attended before a couple of months ago. Maybe it was last year, but we talked about it at that time over on my YouTube. But it's great to see that this collection of art is being amplified in this way. It is absolutely beautiful. We actually went to, on my YouTube, we went to their website and we looked at many of the pieces and parts of the exhibition, and we talked about it there on my YouTube channel. But to see this, you know, making its rounds and people to be watching it and looking at it, it is amazing. I really wish I could attend. As y'all know, I am from Texas. Well, I'm from Dallas, not Houston, but I'm from Texas. And so seeing that this is on display in Houston, I would have happily made that drive. It would have been a couple more hours than I'm used to driving, but I would have happily made that drive to see this. So hopefully I can make a trip to see it at some point, because I definitely want to see this in person. What a beautiful exhibit. And if you go to Sussex.com, you'll see that Queen Doria Ragland and Queen Tina Knowles, two mothers of two powerhouse women killing it in their industries and their fields right now, took a photo together. It is one of my favorite photos that I've seen from either of them. They look absolutely beautiful. And also secretly confirms that, in my mind, Beyonce and Meghan are like secret besties. I know that they know each other, but I personally just want them to be secret besties. And so when I saw their mothers together, I was like, my conspiracy confirmed. And now we're going to switch gears to the third engagement that I wanted to talk about. Again, this was posted to archwell.org recently, I think either today or yesterday. However, this is from an event that took place in March. And so this reads, Family Day in Uvalde, and you can find this on Sussex.com by selecting R12 Foundation, or you can go to r12.org, whatever tickles your pickle. Also, I have a link in the description box below for all of these sources. It starts with, in early March, Prince Harry and Meghan, the Duke and Duchess of Sussex, and the R12 Foundation hosted a heartwarming day of unity, healing, and unwavering support in Uvalde, Texas, with our partners at Kaboom. This gathering brought together parents and children from the local community for an afternoon of engaging activities and quality time. The Duchess first visited Uvalde in 2022 following the tragic shooting at Robb Elementary School. Since that poignant visit, she has maintained the bonds with families she met, and along with R12 Foundation, has remained deeply involved in the community. Spurred by their initial visit and recognizing the profound need for a sanctuary that fosters joy and healing for children, the Duke and Duchess championed the creation of a playground as a symbol of hope for the community. Unveiled in October of 2022, this playground has since blossomed into a vibrant hub of unity and promise for the city, symbolizing the enduring power of community and their continuous pursuit of a brighter tomorrow. Now, we did talk a little bit about this engagement at that time, but it's great to see that it is up on the website with all of the details. Feel free to go check it out, and it is in the updates section. I love that they have maintained that relationship. We saw several examples of that, even Meghan and Harry visiting some of the families of some of the children who had passed away and singing happy birthday to one of the mothers. It was beautiful, and I love seeing their very chill demeanor. Everywhere they are, they just seem absolutely comfortable and fully engaged. And it looks like they just really connect with people very well. And so if you haven't seen that, feel free to go check out one of my videos on Patreon where I talked about that engagement and about their time with one of the families while they were in Texas. But it's great to see that they have updated the site to include the details. So now we have to talk about the tragedy that has occurred for World Central Kitchen. I have struggled with talking about this. When I learned of this yesterday, I decided not to post a podcast episode. I was just not in a place to post. I was so devastated. Along with this information and finding out that Chance Perdomo passed away, oof, it was just a little moment of grief. I was very, very sad. I was just kind of like, you know, I don't want to talk to them when I'm not in a decent enough headspace. I was just kind of sad. So I took a day to process all of this, and I wanted to gather the information so that you and I could talk about it here. So I'm going to be pulling from an article in Time Magazine, World Central Kitchen aid workers were killed in Gaza. And I also have some things that I want to address once we get through this. Now, this article was written by Asta Rajvansi, and this is linked in the description box below, of course. The World Central Kitchen, an American nonprofit group founded by celebrity chef Jose Andres to feed people in need during global conflicts and disasters, said it was devastated to confirm that seven members of its team were killed by an Israeli airstrike while traveling in two armored cars in a deconflicted zone in Gaza on April 2nd. Again, I want to repeat that they were traveling in armored vehicles in deconflicted zones in Gaza. And I think that highlights why people have been so up in arms at what's going on and how, you know, I don't want to upset anyone, but we just got to be honest about it, how this is a genocide. I mean, we got to just say it. I mean, this is a genocide, and Palestinians are not safe. And even people who are trying to help and protect and save and rescue and administer aid are also not safe. And it's heartbreaking. To say the least, it is heartbreaking. But let's continue. Quote, despite coordinating movements with the IDF, the convoy was hit as it was leaving the Deir al-Balah warehouse, where the team had unloaded more than 100 tons of humanitarian food aid brought to Gaza on the maritime route. World Central Kitchen stated, adding that it was immediately pausing its operations in Gaza and the region. Since the beginning of the Israel-Hamas war, I mean, I struggle with calling it a war, but let's continue. In October, at least 196 aid workers have been killed in Gaza, according to the U.S.-funded aid worker security database. Most of those killed worked for UNRWA, the UN-run aid agency for Palestinian refugees. Aid groups have repeatedly called for a humanitarian ceasefire in response. World Central Kitchen stationed aid workers in Gaza when the war first began. Last month, the group shared it had served more than 35 million meals to Gazans in need and opened more than 60 community kitchens across the besieged territory. Its CEO, Aaron Gore, described the latest attack as unforgivable. Quote, "This is not only an attack against World Central Kitchen, this is an attack on humanitarian organizations showing up in the most dire of situations where food is being used as a weapon of war." She's absolutely right. Chef Jose Andres also released a statement, and he says, "Today, World Central Kitchen lost several of our sisters and brothers in an IDF airstrike in Gaza. I am heartbroken and grieving for their families and friends and our whole World Central Kitchen family." Let's see. Here we go. "These are people, angels I served alongside in Ukraine, Gaza, Turkey, Morocco, Bahamas, Indonesia. They are not faceless. They are not nameless. The Israeli government needs to stop this indiscriminate killing. It needs to stop restricting humanitarian aid, stop killing civilians and aid workers, stop using food as a weapon. No more innocent lives lost. Peace starts with our shared humanity. It needs to start now." How anyone could be okay with this happening is beyond me. This is terrible. My heart absolutely broke. "The bodies of the aid workers were taken to Al-Aqsa Hospital in the southern city of Rafah on the Egyptian border. On Wednesday, April 3rd, World Central Kitchen revealed the names of all the victims, calling them heroes. The workers include Australian World Central Kitchen employee Zomi Frankom, Damien Sobol from Poland, Palestinian driver and translator Saif Assam Abu Taha, dual U.S.-Canadian citizen Jacob Flinkinger, and British workers John Chapman, James Henderson, and James Kirby. On Tuesday, the White House released a statement from President Joe Biden saying he was outraged and heartbroken by the aid workers' deaths. They were providing food to hungry civilians in the middle of a war. They were brave and selfless. Their deaths are a tragedy, Biden stated. It absolutely is. In the UK, Prime Minister Rishi Sunak said he was shocked and saddened by the incident, while Foreign Secretary David Cameron demanded a full investigation. "It is essential that humanitarian workers are protected and able to carry out their work," Cameron posted. So the article that I am reading from also included a biography of each of the aid workers who were killed by the Israeli airstrike. And I encourage you to take a look at that. Over on Patreon, we are going to take a look at that together. But if you are just listening along, great. I'm so happy to have you here. You are more than welcome to look at the description of this episode and feel free to click on this link from Time Magazine. And you can see the description of each of the aid workers. I also want to go ahead and read the full statement from President Joe Biden. It says, "Statement from President Joe Biden on the death of World Central Kitchen workers in Gaza, released April 2nd, 2024. I am outraged and heartbroken by the deaths of seven humanitarian workers from World Central Kitchen, including one American, in Gaza yesterday. They were providing food to hungry civilians in the middle of a war. They were brave and selfless. Their deaths are a tragedy. Israel has pledged to conduct a thorough investigation into why the aid workers' vehicles were hit by airstrikes. That investigation must be swift, it must bring accountability, and its findings must be made public. Even more tragically, this is not a standalone incident. This conflict has been one of the worst in recent memory in terms of how many aid workers have been killed." I also want to include civilians. "This is a major reason why distributing humanitarian aid in Gaza has been so difficult, because Israel has not done enough to protect aid workers trying to deliver desperately needed help to civilians. Incidents like yesterday's simply should not happen. Israel has also not done enough to protect civilians. The United States has repeatedly urged Israel to deconflict their military operations against Hamas with humanitarian operations in order to avoid civilian casualties. The United States will continue to do all we can to deliver humanitarian assistance to Palestinian civilians in Gaza through all available means. I will continue to press Israel to do more to facilitate that aid, and we are pushing hard for an immediate ceasefire as part of a hostage deal. I have a team in Cairo working on this right now. Earlier today, I spoke with my friend, Chef Jose Andres, the founder of World Central Kitchen, to convey my deepest condolences for the deaths of these courageous aid workers and to express my continued support for his and his team's relentless and heroic efforts to get food to hungry people around the globe. May God bless the humanitarian workers killed yesterday and comfort their families and loved ones in their grief. President Joe Biden. I really appreciate that statement, but I'll say this. This is just heartbreaking. As you know, we have talked about Chef Jose Andres several times. He and Megan are very well acquainted. She has helped out World Central Kitchen several times. She's also contributed a recipe to his book that benefits World Central Kitchen. And he's gone on record to say several glowing things about her in the midst of her trial by media, where people were attacking her. And he's always spoken to her character, and they've always supported each other publicly and privately. And so, as well as Prince Harry. So that's how I was already acquainted in some way with Chef Jose Andres. I knew about World Central Kitchen because of my time covering, you know, Megan and her efforts and her philanthropy, et cetera. And so this would have been sad regardless, but to already have been following his work and the advancement that World Central Kitchen has made and sharing that on my YouTube channel quite frequently, it's really like a blow to the gut. And I can't describe it as anything but. And I also want to share something. This is in no way meant to condemn anyone necessarily. People handle bad news differently. People handle grief differently. And no one who's just gotten news like that is in their best state of mind. So let me be very clear that I understand this is just a sensitive time, but I really do dislike the narrative that people were running with. For example, I saw several people say, several public figures, I should say something along the lines of, can you believe British people were killed in this conflict? Can you believe an American was killed in this conflict? And I just want to remind people, as an American myself, no life is greater than any other. And if you are just now outraged by what's going on in Gaza and what's happening to Palestinians, then you have not been paying attention. And to be outraged that a British person or an American person or a Canadian person was killed, but you don't share that same outrage that Palestinians are being killed, I need you to check in and check in quickly and really acknowledge where the blind spot is happening, because no life is worth more than another. Me being from America and, God forbid, being killed in something like that isn't more important than a Palestinian person being killed. People are people, not nameless, faceless enigmas. These are people. And every day, Palestinians are being slaughtered. And so I'm sharing that to say, I understand the conflict. I understand the argument that people are presenting as, well, you know, what happened with Hamas, et cetera. What I am saying is civilians should not be massacred. Humanitarians should not be massacred. And we should not tap into outrage when it happens to someone who isn't Palestinian. The moment people are becoming shocked is when it's an American. The moment when people are becoming shocked is when it's a British person. It doesn't fly for me. And it really says something deep about the belief that that person who's saying things like that has. Like, now that several Gaza or several British people and an American have been killed, now something needs to be done. Something should have been done a long time ago. And so I just want to share that because it implies that the life being lost already prior to this incident wasn't as significant as this, as the people who were involved in this incident. I think it hurts in a different way because it was humanitarian workers. And so they went into a non-conflict zone to render aid as humanitarians. And they've done everything they can to render aid and follow the rules and make sure that they were properly identified and properly protected. And to be targeted is quite insane and quite heartbreaking. I understand that aspect, but the narrative that now that it's someone who isn't Palestinian, now we can be upset, really upsets me. Life is being lost. Innocent life is being lost. And that is simply unfair. And it is not okay. And we should have been outraged. So I just rebuke that narrative. And I want to leave it there. I don't want to get into a little sad moment, but it really bothered me to see that. Like, oh, now that British people have been harmed, we got to do something. And I'm sitting there like, excuse me, you should have been wanting to do something from the very beginning. it's almost implies that, oh, because they're not Palestinian, now we can care. And I don't like that. Human life is human life, regardless of where you're from, where you're from. Human life is human life. And I really rebuke that narrative. So let's move on from that. My sincerest condolences to Chef Jose Andres and the World Central Kitchen team and everyone who is suffering in this senseless conflict. My heart is with you. My heart is with you. And my heart is also with those of you who are doing something and taking action in a multitude of ways. Please know that I am with you in that. And I'm not one to boast charitable efforts. You know that. Unless it has something directly to do with my media, my coverage, whatever the things that I'm talking about, I don't talk about that. But just know we're all, those of us who have been outraged for quite some time, are all pulling our weight in the ways that we can. And I just want to say, I see you and I'm with you. And hopefully this conflict ends soon. So now we have to switch gears. I was living under a rock, apparently, because I had no idea King Charles's form of cancer had been announced. Prior to now, all I had known was that King Charles had cancer. He did not disclose what kind he had. However, it was not related to the type of surgery that he had or to the surgery he had in January. That's all I knew. But to now find out that it is being reported that he has pancreatic cancer, I'm a little surprised. So In Touch Weekly is actually reporting this. I'm going to read it straight from them because I don't want to get anything wrong. And it's an article written by Alyssa Norwin, and it was published on March 22nd. So y'all know I was clearly living under a rock for me to not bring this to you guys. I had no idea. And this was an In Touch Weekly exclusive. So let's get into it. Less than 2 months after Buckingham Palace confirmed that King Charles III was diagnosed with cancer, sources exclusively revealed to In Touch that the king is battling pancreatic cancer and has actually been given 2 years to live. That probably shocked me most of all. While the royal family has kept tight-lipped about the specifics of Charles's illness, including the type of cancer he has, a source exclusively confirms to In Touch that the king's diagnosis is known to be an open secret among royal staffers. Well, I would kind of assume that because they're working directly with the family. Many courtiers believe Charles's cancer is worse than they're making it out to be, a second insider adds. Even before the diagnosis, there were concerns about his health. Yeah, I also felt like it's probably a lot worse than they're letting on, which may have contributed to the whole melee around Kate. Buckingham Palace confirmed on February 5th that Charles had been diagnosed with an unspecified form of cancer. He received his diagnosis after having surgery for a benign enlarged prostate on January 26th. Quote, His Majesty has today commenced a schedule of regular treatments, during which time he has been advised by doctors to postpone public-facing duties, the palace's statement said. Throughout this period, His Majesty will continue to undertake state business and official paperwork as usual. The monarch has since attended a few public engagements. Quote, Charles is keeping up with some appearances, not only to squash the wild conspiracy theories and false reports of his death, but to ensure people that he's still able to perform his duties as king, the second source says, adding that Charles is following doctor's orders and willing to try any treatment to extend his life by a few years at least. Damn. Charles became king after the death of his mother, Queen Elizabeth II, in September of 2022. He formally accepted the royal title at his coronation in May 2023. Quote, It's a tragedy that Charles won't be able to follow in his mother's footsteps of leaving a lasting legacy. Okay, he took the throne in his mid to late 70s. I mean, come on. Amid the king's cancer battle, his wife, Camilla, Queen Consort, his sister, Princess Anne, and his eldest son, Prince William, the Prince of Wales, have stepped in to attend engagements that he's had to miss. I mean, how many did Prince William step in for? Because he's barely keeping up with his own schedule. Quote, His aides can tell that Charles still worries about his legacy, the second insider shares, adding that the head royal tends to worry himself with thoughts about whether William, who's next in line for the throne, is ready to take his place as king. Meanwhile, the family is remaining optimistic about Charles's condition in front of the public. He's doing very well, Camilla said during a visit to Northern Ireland on March 21st. He was very disappointed he couldn't come. The palace has not given a formal update about Charles's health in weeks, but did shut down reports that he had died on Monday, March 18th. Y'all, we're really trying to get Charles up out of here. I saw that on Twitter. Where did that start? I tried to find the origin point for those rumors that Charles had died, and those memes, y'all can really make any situation, no matter how dire, kind of funny. But apparently that started from somewhere, and I have no idea where that came from. I just opened my Twitter and saw everybody saying Charles is dead, and I said, okay, I'm gonna exit until we get some answers. Quote, "We are happy to confirm that the king is continuing with official private business," Buckingham Palace's statement has read. So let's move up to this point where he says he's concerned about William taking the throne. Apparently, that is a not so secret narrative, and he really does have concerns. To be fair, that might be the only thing Charles has gotten right. I also agree. I don't think William is going to make a great king because he's not even a good prince. But let's read through some of this. I want to get to the reasons why Charles seems to be concerned with William becoming king. It says, "Charles knows the pressures of being the monarch," the source adds, "and he just isn't sure William is ready to take his place. It seems premature, and there could be consequences." Amid Kate Middleton's health crisis, she announced on March 22nd that she had been diagnosed with cancer. Old rumors of an affair between William and Rose Hanbury resurfaced. While Rose insisted that the rumors are completely false, Charles is still worried that his eldest son will repeat the same mistake he made himself when he cheated on the prince's mother, Princess Diana. Quote, "It's a very awkward situation," the source admits. William has also reportedly turned to alcohol to deal with the stress. Oh my God. Now let me see, who am I reading this from? This is coming from In Touch Weekly, also written by Alyssa Norwin. Alyssa's been on it. I'm going to follow her on social media. Anyway, let's get back to, you see, I get distracted. But I was like, who is spilling tea like this? Okay. William has also reportedly turned to alcohol to deal with the stress, with as many as 4 drinks a night, claims the source. Although the royal has nicknamed One Pint Willie by his cousin-in-law, Mike Tindall. Y'all know Mike Tindall. Did I talk to y'all about that? Was he was part of some competition a long time ago where he was throwing little people at a bar for like a competition, like picking up little people and throwing them. These people are the weirdest group of people in the world. I don't know how they're revered in any way. They are just strange folks. But anyway, let's get back to the story. The insider says he has a habit of having a few drinks when he's letting loose with friends. Okay, there's really nothing wrong with that. But if he's downing 4 drinks every night, especially in the midst of all of this, he needs to find a more healthy coping mechanism, therapy. He should not have mocked Prince Harry's journey into therapy. He should have absolutely joined him when he was invited several times. A 2021 report claimed that William would have beers after work and several glasses of wine with dinner, leading him to wake up crabby, which his father was not pleased about. Is that why people say he's a bully? Was that what was leading to his behaviors that have led people to now see him as a bully? When he was throwing his brother around and pointing his finger in people's face and being rude and nasty, is that what was going on? Anyway, quote, "Charles has counseled him that there can be no more carefree outings to the pub anymore." Now, let me say this. During the week of Thomas Kingston's passing, the next day they were scheduled to attend, the royal family was scheduled to attend the memorial of Prince William's godfather who had died the year prior. And William didn't make it to the funeral the year prior, so everyone was expecting him to lead the family to the memorial service 1 year later, especially since Charles wasn't there. William stepped back and said it was for personal reasons, and everyone was like, what the hell is going on? Well, he still attended a Holocaust memorial event that he had because it was rescheduled from the earlier. But then he also attended a pub outing where he was just gleeful and having fun. And it was such a far cry in the same week to say, I can't make my own godfather's memorial, but I can go to a pub and drink and hoop it up on camera. It was concerning. And he certainly made it to that. So I can see why people are like, where are your priorities, friend? Okay, back to the article. William's temper is also a cause for concern in the king's eyes. In his tell-all spare, Prince Harry recalled a fight he had with his older brother, writing, "William grabbed me by the collar, ripping my necklace, and he knocked me to the floor. I landed on the dog's bowl, which cracked under my back, the pieces cutting into me." Yeah, that was a really sad story. We covered that on my YouTube. A second source tells In Touch, word is the altercation Harry mentioned in Spare wasn't the first to occur. There was a growing rivalry between William and Harry ever since they were little, and sometimes things got heated between them. Royal author Tom Quinn has also alleged that the hot-headed future king has directed his anger at Kate as well, to the point that they have had terrible rows where they throw things at each other. While Charles is willing to try any treatment to extend his life by a few years at least, William remains frustrated by the rampant rumors about him as he awaits the throne. William does a very good job putting on a smile and calm face in public, but it does bother him. The feeling is that the current climate surrounding the monarchy has already cast a long shadow on his future as king. I can tell you what would turn it around. Stop being your standard Baldilocks bullying self and reach back out to your brother. Apologize. Mean it. Commit to reformative action. Restore the relationship between you and him. Extend your deepest apologies to Meghan, the Duchess of Sussex. Commit to restorative behavior between you and her. Then show up as an uncle in the best ways that they will allow, because you have not, which has been the point that's been the most disappointing to me. It's one thing for siblings to fight, but when you take it to the kids, you are a low down dirty hussy, or as Nene would say, a low down dirty monkey with a wig on, or I should just say with a ball cap on. You should never take it to the kids. I never felt the heat when my mom and her sister were fighting, or my dad and his siblings were fighting or not in the good space. Baby, I was still rolling up to the house talking about, what kind of candy y'all got? Can I jump on your trampoline? Can I spend the night? I don't like what grandmama cooked for dinner. I was always over my aunts and uncles' houses. I was at my uncle's house so much, every summer they stopped calling and going to my grandma's, because I would, as soon as I touched base at grandma, I would drop my bags at grandma, give her a hug and a kiss, give my granddaddy a hug and a kiss, and then walk straight across the street to my Uncle Billy's house. Like, I was setting up shop. I love being with my aunts and uncles, and I value that relationship. Now that I'm an aunt, I value that relationship. Every time I get a text or a phone call from my niece and nephew, I am over the moon. I love talking to them. I cannot imagine taking the heat I have with my sibling to my babies. Absolutely not. As an uncle, you are in their village. You're next in line. If their parents need help or need something or need support, you're there for them. That's an amazing honor to be considered part of a child's village. So to see how William has, I'm already an uncle, he's kind of had that rebuffing attitude towards his own niece and nephew, has told me everything I needed to know about Mr. Baldilocks. Him, his yellow crunchy teeth, his nasty attitude, his bald landing strip on the top of his head, his swaying and engagements, all of that. I can laugh at a lot, but I cannot laugh at him not showing up as an uncle. And I won't laugh at it, because ain't shit funny. Ain't shit funny about that. Those kids deserve to have a good uncle. And now, one thing I am glad about, if you don't plan to do your best, stay out the way. So I am glad that if he wasn't going to do right by those babies, he didn't try to pretend and go around them with that nasty energy. And I love how Harry and Meghan protect them babies. They protect those babies, and I'm glad about it. But aside from that, the fact that he has not shown up as an uncle has always been the point that pissed me off the most. It's the one thing I really can't laugh about. I can make fun of everything else for the most part, but him not showing up as an uncle is disgusting, and he should feel shame. He should truly hang his head anytime that comes up, because it's disgusting. There's no reason for it. Siblings are going to fight. I don't understand why people feel like siblings are supposed to get along all the time. You don't. Some siblings don't like each other, period. There's some siblings who, other than the fact that they're born to the same two people, don't have anything in common. I have three siblings. I'm only a full sibling with one of them. And all of us are in very different phases of our lives. and we just don't have that much in common. That doesn't mean when they have children, I'm not jumping for joy because Auntie Sharon is here. I always say I'm an Auntie first before I'm anything else. I've been an Auntie since I was 20 years old. And William should know that when you become an aunt or an uncle, you have to own up to that title for the rest of your life. You have to lay that foundation early so that they know they can always depend on you. It's an essential part of a child's growth. So anyway, it disappoints me. If you can't even be a brother or an uncle, what makes you think you can be a king? That's what confuses me. People can sit here and say, oh, we have all the faith in William in the world. Why? Why do you have that faith? What has he led? What has he spearheaded? You can look at Harry and look at his resume. That's public knowledge. You can look at Meghan and look at her resume. That's public knowledge. Neither of them have ever had to be dragged out of bed and dragged to work. they work on their own. And that's never more evident than now when they're not associated with the royal family as senior working royals anymore. And they are working twice as hard. They never slow down. As a matter of fact, they're twice as productive as the sitting royals at this time. And it's insane to me how anybody can look at the output that Harry and Meghan are doing and then the output from the entire royal family and consider like the royals are working. I don't even like the term working royal, because what is a working royal? They should say a social royal. That's more appropriate. They're social. They go out, they do the little thing, yin 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 around the house, they wave. They might shake a hand or two, might smile, might mumble. Kate's gonna bring the mumbles. She's gonna pack the mumbles and bring them with her. Baldy Locks is gonna laugh disproportionately to whatever's being said. He loves a good ha ha ha. I've known, watching several of his engagements, people could be saying anything. Did y'all see him at the BAFTAs? People could be saying anything. They could be like, oh, William, your shoe is untucked. Oh, really? Like, okay, dude, relax. He just like his wife. They some cackling hyenas. Anyway, hopefully Kate's doing well. Let me lay off of her. I've been on her a little bit for a while now. Let me lay off of Kate. But anyway, that is all I have for y'all today. It's kind of short and sweet, but I wanted to talk about the important matters. I asked a couple of weeks or a couple of episodes ago, I asked, what frequency would you like this podcast? I went from considering daily, like my YouTube was. My YouTube had gotten to the point where it was a daily video. And then I was considering, three or four times a day. I mean, three or four times a week. And overwhelmingly, people emailed me and responded to that by saying Monday, Wednesday, Friday would be perfect, which I love, because then I can alternate that with my Patreon post, because Patreon gets a lot more content. So anyway, we are now introducing the podcast frequency of three times a week, Monday, Wednesday, and Friday. So that is all I have for y'all. I hope you enjoyed this episode. We are up to 7,000 downloads. Hopefully we get to 10 very soon. I want to say thank you so much to everyone for all of the support. And of course, first and foremost, thank you so much to the Squatties. I really appreciate the support. Again, my heart goes out to Chef Jose Andres. And thank you so much, Harry and Meghan, for continuing to weather the storm and be there for people worldwide through the R12 Foundation. And of course, I'm excited about whatever's coming from R12 Productions. So that's all I have for y'all. Thank y'all so much for watching. Don't forget to like and follow if you would like. And feel free to share so more people can find the podcast. And feel free to check out my Patreon for the video version of these podcast episodes. And I will see you next time. Bye. Everybody, welcome back to the Sharing and Sade podcast.